All right, welcome back to the deep dive. Today we're going to be jumping into a Supreme Court case that's, well, it's a pretty big deal when you're trying to wrap your head around patent law. It's Caritas Manufacturing Co. v. CO2 Fire Equipment Co., back from 1952.
Yeah, this one, it really sets the stage for understanding like how these patent battles play out when you've got multiple lawsuits about the same invention going on in different courts. We'll be getting into the nitty-gritty of, who actually gets to decide where that legal fight happens, the company with the patent or the one that's being accused of infringing on it.
And for all of you out there in law school, getting a good grasp on Caritas, I mean, it's a huge boost when it comes to like really understanding civil procedure, especially, things like forum shopping, which we'll get into, and just how much leeway judges have in making decisions about, the procedures of a case. Plus, it throws you right into the deep end of patent litigation, which can get pretty messy. So whether your sights are set on IP law or you just want to have a solid grasp on how lawsuits work, this deep dive is going to be right up your alley. So let's break this down. What were the events that kind of kicked off this whole legal saga that ended up at the Supreme Court?
Well, it all starts with CO2 Fire Equipment Company. They held patents for squeeze grip valves and discharge heads, the parts you'd find in a portable fire extinguisher. And back on January 17, 1950, they decided to sue Acme Equipment Company claiming patent infringement. Filed that lawsuit right in the Northern District of Illinois.
Okay, so classic patent infringement claim. But I'm guessing that wasn't the end of it, right? This is where Caritas comes in, I imagine.
Exactly. Caritas Manufacturing Co. They didn't waste any time. About 6 weeks later, March 9, 1950, they went and filed their own lawsuit against CO2. Now, this wasn't just a regular lawsuit. It was what's called a declaratory judgment action.
A declaratory judgment, huh? Okay, so for our listeners, remind us what that means in this context.
Sure. So basically, Caritas goes to the U.S. District Court for Delaware and asks for a declaration from the court saying that CO2's patents, well, they weren't actually valid, and of course that Caritas' own products weren't infringing on anything.
So they were trying to kind of get ahead of things. I mean, basically asking the court to settle the patent issue before potentially, getting hit with an infringement lawsuit themselves, trying to take control, it seems like.
It was definitely a strategic move. See, a declaratory judgment lets a company, if they think a lawsuit's coming their way, try to get a resolution, preemptively. And CO2, they responded pretty quickly. On March 22, 1950, they amended their original complaint in Illinois to include Caritas as a defendant. So now you've got this kind of tangled web of lawsuits
Okay.
overlapping in two different states, both about the same patents and with at least one party in common.
So you've got this legal chess match brewing. What happens next in this procedural volley?
So Caritas, they started the whole thing in Delaware. And naturally, they want to stop CO2 from going after them in Illinois. You can imagine there were probably strategic reasons they prefer Delaware. And CO2, well, they're arguing that the whole thing should stay in Illinois where they first filed against Acme. They want the Delaware case put on hold. So all of this leads to, well, some clashing decisions in the lower courts. The district court in Delaware, they initially say, okay, we'll pause things here. Let's see how things shake out in Illinois.
Makes sense. Try to avoid conflicting rulings. So what happened in Illinois?
Well, hold on. It gets a bit more complicated. A different judge in that same Delaware court later decides, nope, we're issuing an injunction, trying to, completely block CO2 from going after Caritas in Illinois.
Whoa. Okay. That's a pretty big turn. One judge says, wait and see. And then another one in the same court basically says, no way, stop the Illinois lawsuit. You can really see how different judges can have different interpretations, even at that lower level.
Exactly. And it doesn't stop there. The Third Circuit Court of Appeals, they step in and overturn the Delaware court's injunction. Basically, their ruling was, let the case in Illinois proceed.
So we have a difference of opinion between courts.
Precisely. It's what we call a circuit split. The Third Circuit says Illinois, and the Delaware court was trying to shut it down. And that is why the Supreme Court decides, all right, we got to step in and settle this.
Okay, so we've got the initial infringement suit, then the declaratory judgment to get ahead of things. Caritas gets added to the Illinois case, and the lower courts can agree on where it all should play out. That's how it landed in the Supreme Court's lap. So, amongst all this procedural wrangling, what was the core legal question they had to figure out?
The big question was, does the Declaratory Judgment Act basically give a company like Caritas, a manufacturer, the right to say, my lawsuit, my chosen court, whenever they're staring down the barrel of a potential patent infringement claim. Mm-hmm. Like, did Caritas just automatically get to have their case in Delaware be the main event?
So it wasn't just about convenience, like whose court was easier to get to. This was about, like, does the law give one side a leg up in choosing where the whole thing goes down?
Yeah, exactly. It's a question of power dynamics in patent lawsuits. Think about it. If a manufacturer could always pick the court, that could lead to some forum shopping. You know, mm-hmm. they might pick a place that's not so convenient or maybe even less favorable for the company holding the patent.
So the Supreme Court had to balance things out, make sure the patent holder still had some say in where they try to enforce their rights.
Right. Their decision could have had a huge impact on how patent cases are fought, whether things get consolidated efficiently or not. So how do they rule? Well, Justice Frankfurter, he wrote the majority opinion.
And what was their take on who gets to tick the forum?
They basically said, no way, to a hard and fast first to file rule. They made it crystal clear that just because you're the first one to file a lawsuit, it doesn't mean you automatically get to call the shots on where it'll be heard.
Okay, so if just filing first isn't the trump card, what does a court look at when there are these dueling lawsuits?
They said, look, there's no magic formula. Instead, the courts, federal courts, got to use their judgment, look at each case with all its unique quirks. It highlights how much discretion judges have in untangling these procedural knots.
Okay, so discretion is key. But there's got to be some kind of, like, guiding principles, right? They can't just decide on a whim.
Of course not. The Supreme Court, they laid out some key factors for courts to weigh. The big one, and it makes a lot of sense, is judicial economy. Basically, courts should aim to avoid having two separate lawsuits grinding away about the same stuff, wasting time and resources. In Caritas, the court specifically pointed out that the Illinois court could handle it all, the original claim against Acme, and the whole CO2 versus Caritas fight.
Yeah, streamline the process, right? Why have two courts potentially coming to different conclusions on the same patent questions?
Exactly. Another big factor is making sure the whole dispute gets settled in one place. They call it comprehensive dispute resolution. Get all the players, all the arguments in front of a single court. And they also said, don't forget about what's fair for both sides. It's about the equitable interests of the parties. So you see, it's a balancing act. It's not just rewarding whoever falls first. It's about what's efficient and what's just.
And you said the Supreme Court, they agreed with the Third Circuit's reasoning. What was it about their decision that the Supreme Court liked?
They basically backed the idea that the Illinois court could handle everything claims involving the manufacturer, Caritas, and the customer, Acme, all under one roof. Plus, they saw that injunction from the Delaware court as, you know, creating unnecessary work. Could have led to two different outcomes, not very economical.
Right. Better to have one court issue a clear, consistent ruling on the whole mess.
Now, they did add a really important point. They said, hey, if CO2 had sued a customer, like Acme, in a place where Caritas couldn't be sued, maybe for jurisdictional reasons then, maybe Caritas' lawsuit in Delaware would make more sense. So you see, it's not like manufacturers are never allowed to file a declaratory judgment somewhere else. It depends. Can all the important parties actually be brought before that first court?
That makes sense. It's about making sure everyone can be part of the same legal process. Now, I remember reading that there was something a little unusual about the Supreme Court's decision.
Oh, yeah. Chief Justice Vincent and Justice Black, they disagreed with the majority, but they didn't write a dissenting opinion, which, you know, isn't super common at the Supreme Court level. We don't know for sure why, but maybe they felt really strongly about a manufacturer's right to choose their forum, or maybe they just had a different view on how much discretion judges should have in these situations. Without a written dissent, their reasoning's kind of up in the air, makes the case even more interesting to unpack.
Always a little mystery, huh? Even at the highest court, they didn't see eye to eye. So looking past the specific case about fire extinguisher parts back in the 50s, what's the lasting impact of Caritas? Why should law students still be poring over this case?
Caritas, it didn't just lay down the law on patent cases with multiple lawsuits in different places. It really shaped how federal courts approach complex litigation, period. The focus on judicial discretion, aiming for efficiency, making sure the whole dispute gets resolved, these ideas, they echo throughout the legal system today.
So its influence reaches beyond patent law. What are some examples?
Sure. Think about when a court decides whether to move a case to a different location. You know, maybe because it's more convenient for the people involved or the witnesses. A lot of those considerations come straight from Caritas. Also, the rules and procedures for handling what's called multi-district litigation, that's where a bunch of related cases filed all over get consolidated for pretrial stuff, those rules were definitely influenced by Caratest.
So even though it came from a patent case, it really shaped how we manage litigation more broadly.
Exactly. It reminds us that judges have a lot of power to shape how things proceed. And appellate courts, even the Supreme Court, they usually respect those decisions unless it's really clear the judge overstepped. The big takeaway for future lawyers is just trying to game the system. Filing first in some court you think will be favorable, that's not a guaranteed win. Courts look at the big picture. It's about fairness and efficiency for everyone involved.
So it's not just about winning the race to the courthouse. It's about understanding what procedural approach actually gets you to a fair and efficient resolution.
Exactly. Smart strategy is part of it. But in the end, it's got to serve the bigger purpose of resolving disputes the right way.
So, to wrap up our dive into Caratest, this case made it clear that when you've got parallel patent lawsuits, neither side automatically gets to choose the battleground. The courts, they have to look at everything and decide what's the best, most efficient way to settle the whole thing.
And they're going to focus on, you know, fairness and making sure the entire dispute gets resolved.
Yeah, that's a great point. So here's a thought for everyone listening. How do you think those core ideas, efficiency and fairness, which we saw in this 1952 fire extinguisher case, how do they play out in other areas of law today? When you've got multiple lawsuits, different courts, overlapping issues, how do we make sure things are resolved fairly and efficiently? Something to ponder. Join us next time on The Deep Dive as we
explore another fascinating corner of the legal world.